listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabriel Owens and Alan Young.
Welcome to Outside the Cage. I'm your host, Gabriel Owens, back from not a long layoff. We actually recorded shows. They just didn't work. Non-airable, unfortunately. So we're going to cover about three shows today. With me, as always, my co-host, Alan Young, and special guest in the studio, the master himself, Brian Kilby. What's up, guys?
Yo.
Hey.
So we have about three shows over the last week or so. UFC, is that 126 or 127?
Something like that.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago. Last week was the big Strikeforce show, the first of the heavyweight tournament. And Challengers was last night. Have you had a chance to see that one yet, Alan?
I have not.
It was pretty good. We'll gloss over that. And even we'll do a little wrestling news. Finally, The Rock has come back to WWE Raw on Monday night. Me and Brian will talk a little bit about that and what it means. And we'll wonder out loud, why does no one in the wrestling right now have a fraction of that charisma? So, yeah, what do you want to start with, Alan?
I don't know. Brian doesn't want to stick around for the whole time, he might want to do the wrestling thing.
I'm very stuck, so feel free to speak with whatever. I'll be here.
Oh, well, in that case, I suppose we could start with the UFC card that was a couple weeks ago. Do a rundown of that.
That sounds good. Let me talk a little news.
Dana White tweeted today that Tito Ortiz was injured yet again and had to drop out of the fight night against whoever he was facing. Lil Nog?
That would be correct. Only problem I have with this microphone, having an actual handheld. I mean, it sounds great and all, but yeah, I have to keep... Anytime I want to do something, I have to put it down and pick it back up. But, yes, Tito Ortiz suffered, according to his Twitter, a concussion. He definitely has stitches that he cannot be cleared for in time. So,
right.
Whether or not he has an actual concussion, Dana didn't say anything about it. So, we know Tito does love his
drama.
Yes. Okay, you're not giving me... Oh, undercard fights, okay. Other words, the heavyweights of UFC seem to be having a lot of fun on Twitter lately, speaking of. Just started throwing around Roy Nelson, started throwing around the idea of maybe doing a Royal Rumble-style heavyweight tournament or heavyweight match, and kind of picked up steam on Twitter, as ridiculous things sometimes do.
What would a Royal Rumble style match be? Tournament?
Whatever. I don't know how it would work in UFC because there's not a ring. But in a Royal Rumble or a Battle Royale, as they're more traditionally called, but you have 20 to 30 wrestlers in a ring, they kind of have a big brawl, and when you get thrown over the top rope and your feet touch the ground, you are eliminated. So in a cage... I don't know how that would work. It's really difficult to throw someone out.
I think it would be difficult to get an athletic commission to sanction that.
Yeah, that would be dangerous, but awesome.
Exactly.
Last man standing.
And would Brock Lesnar have an advantage in that, since you know he's actually done Royal Rumbles?
I mean, how would you actually referee that? There'd be fish hooking everywhere.
It'd be really hard to call. Yes. It would be so you have just one referee in there, and you got, say, 10 heavyweights. I mean, how do you watch each guy?
You obviously cannot. But you throw in multiple refs while you're at it.
I guess you'd have to. Anyway, it's never going to happen, so.
No.
It's a funny idea. Anyway, let's just go to UFC 126. Let's see what aired. Paul Taylor,
the first fight to air was, well, and I use the word air loosely, was on Facebook. Kid Yamamoto, his UFC debut against Demetrius Johnson.
Not a spectacular debut for the kid.
Not a spectacular debut. Johnson basically took Kid down at will. Neither one did a whole lot of damage, and Johnson won the fight by decision 30-27,
30-27,
and 29-28. And some judge gave a round to Kid for some reason that I could not discern.
Adelaide Byrd gave round two to a kid despite being taken down five times and having no offense. I don't know either. Basically, the story of this fight was Kid refused, and his corner refused to change their game plan, just kept looking for the overhand right. And every single time he threw the overhand right, he got taken down. So it was poor, poor game planning.
Right.
After the first round, that should have stopped. His corner should have said, because they were doing translations of his corner on the commentary, and they said, okay, keep trying to go for the overhand right. Keep going for it. And I'm like, why? It didn't work. Did the opposite, actually.
For an underhand left.
Or he could have shot on him. He could have shot himself. He's actually a pretty good wrestler, but
yeah,
not looking good for the Japanese, as always. I've talked on the show before. Japanese are kind of stubborn and sticking to how they train for fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It is outdated by today's standards. They're getting left behind. Other than Yushin Okami, I guess, is the only real success in high-level MMA right now.
And just to interject on that note, to get off on a brief tangent, I keep reading that Dream is basically financially not doing well and could fold at any time. So,
yeah, they're not getting. They don't have any. Their ratings are bad.
They're not able to pay their fighters.
Bounce checks.
Yes.
Or just not paying. Checks. Or yeah, they're not just paying them at all.
Right.
K1's not doing much better, and K1's traditionally a lot stronger company.
Ooh.
Okay. I thought I lost you guys here. I was having trouble on Skype last night.
I muted myself briefly because I'm clearing my throat a lot.
Just let it all hang out on the air, man.
Better?
Absolutely. Loved it.
All right. So, on to the card. The next fight aired prelims on Spike. Chad Mendez versus Omagawa. Mihihiro. However you pronounce that.
Michihiro
Omagawa.
Very vague memories of this fight. I just remember not being very exciting.
Well, I have notes.
Outstanding.
So. let's see. I could read my notes, but that would not be very exciting.
Not as exciting as a Steven Seagal at UFC video. I'm looking at it right now, I'm sure.
Okay. That translates well into a podcast.
Doesn't it? Yeah, it's... go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Mendez pretty much owned the whole fight. First round, Mendez got Omagawa down, did some ground and pound. Omagawa nearly got an armbar, but failed to complete it, and Mendez basically got the better of the striking, which was pretty much the story of the whole fight. Mendez gets the better of the stand-up with the occasional takedown and a little ground and pound thrown in for good measure, and the judges all gave it 30-27 to Mendez.
Yeah, from what I remember, yeah, it's kind of a just a their fight. Mendez was dominant, and about it. Next fight was Donald Cerrone, taking a step up in competition from showing the 155ers from WC do belong in the UFC, defeating Paul Kelly for via rear naked choke.
Right.
It's a fun fight. Cerrone looks, as everyone always thought, Cerrone is a game 155-er. He should do a, he's still young, and he'll do well in UFC, I believe.
He's holding his own. Kelly had a nasty cut over his right eye, apparently, according to my notes.
I don't remember that. Then again, after Fedor's eye, I don't, you know, all other injuries look kind of tame.
But we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Sure. Speaking of people who should have made a spectacular UFC debut and ended up stinking up the joint, Miguel Torres versus Antonio Banuelos, a.k.a. Chuck Liddell's bitch. Miguel beat him unanimously. He pulled a Tim Sylvia and worked his jab and worked his jab and worked his jab. Kept the smaller fighter at bay and just jabbed his way to a decision.
Right. Very much like GSP did in his fight against Koscheck. And Torres had been training with GSP, I believe, that's if I recall correctly.
And yet his fight was completely... GSP's was at least a somewhat exciting fight. This was not. It's certainly not... Certainly not what we expect from Miguel. He's, you know, a great... It's this Greg Jackson stuff, you know, because Clay Guida goes to Greg Jackson, all of a sudden he's spinning around dancing. Miguel Torres goes to Greg Jackson, now he's just kind of throwing out the jab. I don't know, everyone needs to stop going to Greg Jackson's camp, damn it.
But it's effective.
I guess. I was not blown away by it. I don't think anyone was.
Not blown away, but I thought it was a pretty solid bout.
You're much kinder to it than I am.
Okay.
But next one, Jake Ellenberger versus Carlos Hocha. It's an odd fight that it was a split decision, but I thought Jake took it fairly handily.
I gave the first round to Hocha.
Yeah, Hocha the first round by leaps and bounds. About as close to a 10-8 as you can get by dominating purely on grappling. He out-grappled the hell out of him. Nearly got a lot of submissions. Jake survived, and then he came back second, third round. He won solid 29-28.
Right. All three judges. Actually,
one judge gave it to Hocha.
One judge gave it 30-27 to Hocha.
Yeah, he's Brazilian.
Okay. Hocha.
Yeah, that was Adelaide Bird again, I believe. He was obviously on some really killer drugs this night.
Or maybe off some.
Yeah. Maybe we should have shared. But anyway, it's the right guy won at the end of the day, so who cares? Even if you got one judge is being really odd.
That's why you have three judges and not two.
I suppose. Plus ties in the judging is kind of not a great thing either.
Yes.
Always have. That's why there's odd rounds and odd number of judges. Then our real co-main event, I thought.
John Jones versus Ryan Bader.
Exciting. Two up-and-coming guys on the... Well, at the time, they were on the verge of being top of the division. And one ended up... Of course, what ended up happening after the fight ended up being more than just who's going to be the next breakout star.
Right. So, first round, basically Jones took Bader down. That's basically the story of it. Jones owned on the ground. Tried to grab a choke but couldn't finish it. Bader tried for his own takedown. Jones stuffed it, ended up on top. Jones controlled all the ground game. Second round, Jones was also winning the stand-up. Bader landed a strong right. Jones looked unfazed. Bader went for a takedown, and Jones ended up on top again. Jones grabbed a guillotine from the top, and Bader tapped, and that was it.
given Bader his first loss, Jones, in most people's minds, is also still is undefeated, you know, barring right. the DQ loss to the deaf kid.
Right.
Everyone knows his bullshit. But other than that, yeah, he was wondering how he's going to handle a supposedly stronger wrestler, and he completely knows.
He owned him. Yeah,
he no sold his wrestling. He's like, he is now they're championing his wingspan. He is a giant. He really does look like a giant man for fighting, especially fighting at 205. He has the longest reach in UFC, even longer reach than the 6'11 Dutch guy. What's his name? Stefan Struve.
There we go. So the surprise at the end of the fight was that Jones's teammate, Rashad Evans, is injured and unable to take his title fight against Hua Shogun. So, therefore, John Jones was offered the title fight right there in the cage, and he accepted it.
And it is now officially signed, so.
So that's going to be quite interesting, because that's, well, for one thing, it'll be a short recovery time for Jones.
But he's also 22.
And he's young, he's relatively inexperienced, but he's looking incredible. And actually, in the betting lines, Jones opened as the favorite against Shogun, which is pretty surprising. But,
A bit surprised, but I think it's going on domination. You know, he's not really even looked in trouble in any of his fights.
Right.
And he's, you know, just steamrolled through everybody. He's gigantic.
He's got the momentum.
It was a cool moment in UFC history. You know, Joe Rogan, you know, basically, I think that Shogun verbally agreed to it, like, 2 minutes before the fight started.
Right.
Not Bader or Jones. The deal was like, if, you know, we'll find someone else. If Bader wins, we'll find someone else. But if Jones wins,
he gets it.
And Shogun and his management, 2 minutes before the fight, said, sure, it's on.
Right.
Apparently, Shogun wasn't very happy with the whole situation, but, you know, he has to change game. He went from training for Rashad, now he's going to train for a whole different beast.
Right.
But, you know, he's been gone for a friggin' year.
Yeah.
He knows he's got to fight. He knows, you know, and who knows how long Shogun can keep going. This is the second time he's been out for a long time with knee problems. He is not quite 30, but, you know, the game has owned this man. He's been around he's been around since his teens in Vale Tudo in Brazil. He's, you know, his body's pretty beat up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when Shogun's on, he is, you know, maybe one of the most difficult 205ers to fight, but you never know when injury, you know, if an injury plays a factor, you know, it just plays, you know, Bones being so young and dynamic and, you know, amazing. I say he could turn around from peaking for this fight in 6 weeks to peak for another. At his age, that's not a problem, as it would be for a guy closer to 30. So,
right.
But it's like he's still young in the sport. I mean, he holds a championship at this age. It's, you know, he might be the next. I said from the beginning he was going to be a big deal, and I think beating Shogun, you know, you might see a future humongous breakout star. And he's, you know, he's got the charisma. You know, he's seems like a very nice young man. You know,
right?
Very religious. He drops. He's
not a shit talker.
Not at all. And he's very, you know, he plays the good religious mama's boy. You know, I said my favorite part, of course, is he studies lucha libre and Japanese pro wrestling on YouTube to learn new moves. That's just awesome. He throws weird elbows from out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
He gets chokes from oppositions because he has ridiculous arm reach. It's
right.
I won't be shocked if he loses to Shogun.
Yeah, a lot of variables there.
Hold on there, guys. My wife asked me if I wanted to eat. That is typically what I do at the end of the day. Yeah, food. Yes, it's... I'm super hyped. I'm super stoked for this guy. You know, since I first saw him, I've been a big fan. of the Martian Manhunter. And so, looking forward to it.
Right.
You're muted.
So the next fight.
Forrest Griffin.
The actual co-main event. Forrest Griffin versus Rich Franklin.
Which was actually a very good fight.
It was. Both guys looked good, but Griffin basically looked better.
Griffin looked a hell of a lot bigger also, speaking of.
That's true. Of course, Rich Franklin being the former middleweight champion, and Forrest Griffin walks around, 240-ish?
He is one of the largest light heavyweights in the UFC.
Right.
He cuts and a hell Franklin. Of a lot. He might, in his, if he's still fighting in his late 30s, he'll probably have to move to heavyweight.
Quite possibly.
I think that was...
So,
oh, go ahead.
So, I was just going to say the story was basically just Griffin taking Franklin down, being on top, ground and pound, controlling on the ground. Forrest stand up looked a little crisper, a little better.
He looked good, and especially when he was up against a more technical striker, and less brawling, more straight technique on his part. Forrest has always been his biggest, always said, I train technique, and then as soon as I get punched, I start brawling. He did not do that in this fight. He stuck to technique, and he looked pretty good.
Yeah.
But this fighting factor of this fight was size. I really wish there was a 195 division. Franklin is, would be, he should create basically a Rich Franklin division. The guy's too valuable. he can't beat Anderson Silva. He's not too small for 205. Create the 195 division. Franklin will probably be your champ. And let
yeah. Although Franklin's actually... started talking about retirement now.
I don't think he will, but I'm sure he saved his money. He lives in Ohio, which has a very low income ratio.
Cost of living.
Yeah, cost of living. That's why half of Ouija lives there. And
I guess the judges gave the last round to.
Franklin, yeah. For Franklin, I don't disagree with it. He edged out the striking in the last round.
Yeah. I gave all three rounds to Forrest, but didn't know the third round was very close. So
yeah, Forrest dominated. He took him down. We actually saw some of Forrest's wrestling. He doesn't use a lot.
Right.
Of course, it's easy to take down a guy you dwarf, I guess. very good ground and pound. We don't see Forrest in that position. Ever, I don't think. And
yeah.
He looked great. He did complain, he obviously had not done that position a lot. He complained he got a rug burn on his, or mat burn on his knees. he realized he also had never really done that position outside of practice, and it really screws your knees up. So, but anyway, yeah, great fight. I don't know what you do with Forrest. I just don't know. He got a couple more wins. You put him back in the title picture. He's too popular. He needs to rehab his image. He's still he took a huge image hit from the Silva fight. There's still people talking people said screw that guy. He looked like a joke against Anderson Silva, which
Well,
I don't know if that's fair. It's Anderson Silva.
Running out of the cage crying didn't really help either.
He does that a lot.
I'm not gonna hate on the guy for that because obviously he. Puts his whole heart into it, and when it doesn't work out, it's pretty devastating, at least immediately. It doesn't look good, but it's fine. He's an emotional guy, whatever. I don't hold that against him.
Brian thinks he's a big pussy. Just suck it up.
Yes, I do.
But Brian is no sympathy for these people.
I have no sympathy for anyone.
That's true. So speaking of Anderson Silva, making people look foolish, we got our main event.
Right. So the first 2 minutes or so of this fight,
No, first the first 2 minutes. What are you talking about? What fight did you see in those 2 minutes? I don't remember one.
Exactly. And, you know, I was sitting in front of the TV thinking, oh, Lord, here we go again.
With nothing happening.
But, man, did Anderson make up for those 2 minutes?
Oh, he did. The front leg kick. Straight to the face.
I'm looking at a picture of it. It is ridiculous. You should not knock a man out with a push kick. That kick is a Muay Thai move to get someone to create distance. It's not meant for knocking people out.
Right. Create distance, disrupt the rhythm, whatever. Yeah. But it went straight to the chin, and Vitor went out.
Well, he dropped. He was out on the floor after he got a couple of right punches to the right hands to the face, but. It was pretty much over from that kick. It's a highlight reel worthy kick. Not quite Anthony Pettis doing the Matrix off the side of the cage kick, but it's up there with it. You know, those are two highlight reel moves.
Right.
So now everyone's reminded Anderson Silva is still a bad, bad man.
He still can fight.
What's next?
The chatter of Anderson versus GSP started up again.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
After this,
well, I'd say Yushin Okami's overdue, but really, it's Yushin Okami. he's been overdue for a title shot for like 2 years, and
yes,
no one
he's knows. Perpetually absolutely. Perpetual bad timing for Yushin Okami's title shot.
And no one cares. I don't think Yushin cares really. It's like I don't want to see that fight. That's boring. So assuming GSP gets by Jake Shields, which I just, other than literally freak occurrence of a puncher's chance, or, you know, GSP gets drunk on his red wine the night before and goes in the cage screwed up and gets caught in a submission. I mean, he could be submitted. Jake's a technically better jiu-jitsu guy, but I just don't see him submitting George. He definitely does not have the stand-up. He doesn't have the wrestling.
No.
I just don't see it. Puncher's chance, puncher's freak luck, or GSP mentally being retarded and getting caught in a submission. But
and I've mentioned before that Shields looked terrible in his fight against Campman. He gassed out early. I mean, he won the fight, and he did it in dominating fashion, but even so, he was clearly tired, gassed out, and
yeah. If he comes in that shape against GSP, no, he's done.
He's dead. Yeah, he's going to have to do a hell of a lot better than that against GSP. Competitive.
Well, you know, hopefully he's back down to, you know, I said for most of his Strikeforce career, he's at 185, and also having to cut.
That was his first cut to 170 in a while, so
yeah,
it's understandable that he'd have trouble with it. And frankly, I think he should have at least one more good fight and before getting a title shot. But
well, he was
that's not my decision to make.
No, I mean, he was brought in to fight GSP. He was basically give that fight was a tune-up fight, and I guess Dana likes Jake Shields, and you know, he was very impressed with his record outside the UFC, and
yeah.
Plus, he also wanted to kind of screw with Showtime. Dana's a very petty, petty man, much like Brian.
Yes.
And
true.
And he just like, you know, here's a guy who just beat Dan Henderson, your big champ at 185. I'm going to steal him because you guys don't have him under contract. Ha ha. It's just how Dan.
Brian doesn't have a swimming pool filled with $100 bills and naked women that he can swim around in.
Not yet. Once he builds this this RFC empire up, you know, Brian's going to, you know, he's going to live like Uncle Scrooge.
So there was one more prelim stuck at the end of that card, Paul Taylor versus Gabe Rudiger, in which Gabe Rudiger got a metaphorical colonic.
Put me in, coach. Shut the fuck up. I think better than Jens Pulver telling him to shut the fuck up. Gabe Rudiger, Mr. Cake. Mr. Ice Cream Cake. He's lost. He's already cut. He only got this fight because he took the last fight on short notice.
Yeah.
So his feet. Yeah, he's not that level. He's probably never will be.
Yeah.
He can't make 155 consistently. I will give him that. That's his one accomplishment. But, he got the crap kicked out of him in the first round, and then the second round he got finished.
Yep.
That's all you can say. So, any
metaphorical
other...
Metaphorical colonic.
I like that. So, any other UFC news you want to talk before we move on to Strikeforce and the big news there?
I have nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
I'm trying to think. We have the fight of, we were talking about Tito's out of fight night, replaced by Paul. Is it Paul Kelly?
Yes. Phil Davis.
Phil Davis. Is he a nurse or something?
Something.
I don't know. Anyway, kind of sucks. And I mean, not that the main event wasn't somewhat of a dream matchup from like the year 2005, but it's at least kind of intriguing there. Former top Pride light heavyweight versus former UFC champ. Said 2005, that would have been a huge match.
Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, it's off the table. Talked about the battle royal. Brock is currently shooting with Junior Del Santos to next season, Ultimate Fighter. It's probably be the, you know, we'll probably beat out the Kimbo season for being the most watched. Early reports say Brock's, hasn't flipped out on anyone. At least of the first week, he hadn't flipped out on anybody yet. But also, the reports stopped coming out, so maybe they clamped down because Brock became Brock. Which, God, I hope so. nothing better than the angry redneck from North Dakota, yelling at these fools. I'm just looking forward to it so much. So
there is a UFC card next weekend. It's not a very exciting one. I don't think.
Main event's intriguing. I'm very
Bitch versus Ken.
Will BJ solidify himself? It might be a default title fight if GSP. You might be looking at I don't know how this kind of work, but essentially GSP beats Jake Shields. He said, and he does take accepts the fight against Silva. He's moving up permanently. He'll be dropping his title. Not Shawn Michaels style. He'll not be losing his smile so much as. Just moving up to 185, so this might be the default
title eliminator.
Yeah. I would assume they do some kind of like at least a 4-man tournament, but who knows? But the main event is intriguing. I can't even think of any fights other than that off the card.
Michael Bisping versus Jorge Rivera, Dennis Seaver versus George Soteropoulos, Chris Lytle versus Brian Ebersole.
Well, I figured Soteropoulos would be on the card, obviously. He's in Sydney.
Right.
Seaver, fun guy. What was the first one you said there?
Bisping versus Jorge Rivera.
Ah, yes. They've been shit-talking, which Bisping is known to do, so.
Yes.
Bisping is quite popular in... his not native, but his colonial, or what do you call it? Colony? Well, not colony. It's British related. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever that word is. Anyway, the Australians like him. How about that?
Yes.
All right, but anyway, let's move on to Strikeforce. We did it last weekend. We did have the first part of the heavyweight tournament. One of the most exciting tournaments we've had since, I think, probably the Openweight Grand Prix of Pride in 06. I've been very hyped for it. We've already seen some interesting stuff.
Right. Had three alternate fights to start the card.
I swear to God they put Valentine Overeem on the fight, not just because he's Alistair's brother, but because it was Valentine. It was almost Valentine's Day. that was our first fight, actually. It was
right.
Ray Sefo is a great kickboxer. He is a shitty MMA fighter. When the fight goes to the ground, he had absolutely nothing. I don't think I've seen anyone win by neck crank since 2000. Neck crank is not a... It's
not a finishing move, generally.
No, it's it's a pain move. Coleman was good at using it back in the day. There's no reason to tap to it, but he's just trying to extreme couture, you know. He's very, very new to the ground, and it was obvious here. As soon as Overeem took him down, it was like, oh, he's done. It's like, yep, he's done. He was already. I think he was about starting to tap on the way down. It was like it was like an Art Jemerson from UFC 1 moment. As soon as Gracie took him down, he just started tapping. So, yeah, he is the cat.
The cat.
Neighbor's cat is tearing up my backdoor screen, and we've talked about this before. Anyway. Overeem, been around forever, and he's a lifelong journeyman. I would. He's not even going to be. None of these guys. If there's going to be an ultimate, it's going to pull up. It's going to be Fedor. Spoiler alert: Fedor loses. But yeah, this was an alternate bout to see who would be an alternate case of. I think it was supposed to be first for the first round alternate, but I don't think that's in the plans anymore.
I'm not sure that's determined yet. I mean, there's a lot of variables, of course. You know, does anyone get injured, and who is able to step in, and who is willing to step in,
right?
And who is it even fair to put in there? Which, you know,
yeah,
it's hard to say that it's fair to put Fedor in as an alternate when he just got eliminated in the first round. Personally,
but he's still Fedor, and you know,
if I was but he's still the greatest heavyweight to ever live.
Right. We'll get to him in a minute. Quickly, the undercard: Chad Griggs beat is it John
Young?
I think it's John Young. I think it's one of those foreign ways of saying John.
Vellante.
Yeah, middle of the first round, knocked him out.
The good thing about Strikeforce cards is you can usually DVR them and then watch the whole card in about 20 minutes.
True, and they don't do prelims, so you know, right. fights go quick. They just go to the next fight. You know,
right?
They can book 3 hours, and it'll. I think this one was literally over in like an hour and a half because they had a lot of quick fights.
You can, you know, as long as you fast forward through the fighter intros and all the stuff in between the fights, just watch the fights, you know, a few minutes, you're done.
I try not to do that too much. I like that stuff, you know. I just kind of get the feel for the fighters and, you know, get their hype.
Yeah.
I was interested in hearing what their entrance music is. But lately I've been disappointed. Everyone's picking some really horrible shit. This card, I don't think I heard one intro music that I liked. So, but anyway, next fight, Shane Del Rosario.
LeVar Johnson.
Is that name? Is that the guy from Star Trek and Reading Rainbow?
That's LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton, okay. The guy should have came out in a, you know.
Butterfly in the sky.
I got LeVar Burton on the brain.
Twice as high.
I got LeVar Burton on the brain. He was on Community this week, so.
Exactly. Take a look.
It's in a book. Reading Rainbow. That was horrible harmony. We should.
Was that supposed to be harmony?
I was trying to time with you, but you just kept breaking up, and you're off beat by about five.
Five.
Anyway, yeah, it was textbook armbar. He got him down. He was looking for the armbar fairly early, you know. Matt Hamill could hear that armbar coming a mile away. And he got it.
Rio, that is.
Then he got it. It was a fun little fight. Almost a full round. Nothing much else to say about it. I don't really care about either person.
Not really. But one of them could end up in the heavyweight tournament.
True. We got an interview with Gina Carano. She's back. She said absolutely nothing, but just looked cute. And that's fine.
No force in the universe can stop her.
I don't know if she's going to stop any hate plagues. I was Googling for a picture of her. Apparently there's like a giant community of the foot fetish people really like Gina Carano's feet. That was
okay. Maybe
the most disturbing thing I found out today.
That was like,
did not need to know that. But yes, she's coming back. She'll be fighting somewhat soon. She has a movie coming out. She said absolutely nothing. This was like, you know, I mean, she's cute and she's charming and she has that Gina Carano charisma, but goddamn, she couldn't. They put her on TV and she had absolutely nothing to say.
I fast forwarded through that part.
You missed absolutely nothing. Unless you just like looking at Gina Carano, which who doesn't, really?
Well, we'll have to notice her feet the next time I see them. Apparently.
It's not my fetish, so I can't judge, you know. But, you know, whatever turns you on, great. But, yeah, I didn't realize, like, apparently among people who are really into women's feet, hers are pretty damn awesome, apparently. So, good to know.
Okay.
Now on to the semi-main first fight in the heavyweight bracket. Sergey Konatov, Andrei Arlovsky fight pretty much happened as everyone thought it was going to happen, you know. I think I could have predicted this fight move by move. Andre would outbox him and look good until he actually got tagged on the chin.
And went out.
He went out. Fourth loss in a row, third time by knockout. Arlovsky has no chin. He's done.
But he's not talking retirement yet. So.
I don't know. He came here to be a model. He's a good-looking man. He's famous. He could go be a model and make a lot of money.
Dude, I hadn't noticed.
Dude, protect your head. I don't want to see him get friggin'. Well, I'm sorry. He's not your type, apparently. But
apparently, yeah.
Trust me, according to my sister, he's like the hottest guy in MMA.
The hairy Russian type.
I don't know. But at any rate, yes, he is actually, he came here to model, not fight, believe it or not. And, you know, dude, protect your head. You've been knocked out a million times now. You know, you're going to have friggin' brain damage. Stop fighting. Go while you're still somewhat young and can get the modeling contracts. Go make money in modeling. What the hell is that, you or Kilby?
Sorry, did you hear that? I was wiping my screen.
Yeah, that's what the noise was. Okay.
Is that what they call it?
Wiping the screen?
Yes.
Well, actually, you do have to do that, I guess, if you're on a laptop after.
I when I beat off the porn on the internet, I try not to actually get it on my laptop. It's just me, though.
So, the main event.
TMI. Okay.
And the only fight to go more than one round.
True. Fyodor Emelianenko. Come on, Alex.
Versus Antonio Bigfoot Silva, the former Elite XC heavyweight champ, who was
Elite Extreme.
He was wasn't he stripped of his title for
steroids?
Steroids, yeah.
Another one doing the horse steroids, the one that stays in your system for like a year. People are stupid. He doesn't look like a guy who needs steroids. He's gigantic. He is. Antonio Silva's the guy has the same gigantal pasta legism. The same thing Andre the Giant and Big Show have. He did have it treated. He stopped growing at about 6'4", but his hands, feet, and head are about the size of the Easter Island statues. Which he resembles, actually. Story of this fight was Fedor looked good in the first round. I think won the first round. He was having a hard. His game plan obviously was to flurry with him and use his superior speed and try to knock him out. Fortunately, Antonio Silva was not playing his game and no sold his punches pretty much.
Mm-hmm. The second round was basically Bigfoot dominating on the ground, took Fedor down immediately and just ground and pounded him 5 minutes.
Dominated is a pretty light work. It was a massacre on the ground.
Yeah.
Fedor barely surviving 5 minutes.
I gave that round 10-8 to Silva.
So did two judges. One judge did keep that round on 10-9. Amazing. Like, what? Really?
Yeah.
What does it take to get a 10-8 out of you, buddy?
Fedor did try to grab a heel hook at the end.
That was not enough to overcome that. It was a 10-8 round.
No.
It was complete domination. He nearly got, you know, I mean, it was, if you're a Fedor fan, you know, you watched him, he survived. You know, he survived a beating of most human beings on the planet would have tapped to. So,
yeah.
Fortunately, the beating was bad enough that it closed an eye. It was disgusting.
Doctor stoppage after the second round.
Yeah.
Fedor's second loss in a row after, what was it, 31 consecutive wins?
Yes, pretty much undefeated, other than a bullshit technical loss in a tournament that was actually not a loss. I guess, which he later revenged anyway.
Right.
Japanese pro wrestler TK. He lost, I mean, obviously fairly squarely to Verdum by a choke. And this fight, he was stopped by a doctor. And he was actually talking retirement. Stronger than what the translator, who was obviously kayfabing it up, kind of softened his words. Like, he actually said, like, no, I'm retiring. And like she was like, I'm thinking about retiring. It was ridiculous. Anyway, the Russian, apparently the Russian mob straightened him out backstage afterwards. Now he says, no, he's not retiring.
So, yeah, interesting. Fedor's obviously going to retire eventually, if not immediately. What's that going to do with K1 in the United States, since M1, the only reason they have any footing with
M1, you mean?
Yeah, M1, sorry. Only reason they have any footing with a semi-major organization is Fedor, and if Fedor retires, M1 has basically nothing to offer Strikeforce anymore, at least on the surface. I would be highly surprised if they continued their relationship after Fedor's retirement.
No, there's a bunch of Red Devil fighters they don't care about. You know,
right.
Alexander maybe, but you know they're not going to co-promote for Alexander and Emelianenko. Come on,
right?
The only reason they get that co-promotion tagline is because of Fedor, and once he's gone, they got nothing. They know they got nothing. They know they're completely lost any ability to get any money out of the UFC. Dana's not paying. Dana will take him event just because of the name, but. The contract they offered of their second time in negotiating is long gone.
Right.
That multi-million, you know, you can do Sambo, you can,
you can advertise M1.
And gone. It's like, no, screw you. No advertise. You know, they don't have to take. They have no reason to take him. It's like you lost to a friggin' freak show fighter and a washed up UFC has been. Dude, UFC has no reason to take him at this point.
Right.
But, I do think if somebody gets injured, he will be the alternate. They'll be pushing to get him back in the tournament somehow. And the rest of the tournament, we have Barnett, Brett Rogers. Barnett might take this. Looking at the bracket, I have a very – I'm going to put my lock in right now. Barnett takes the tournament. I think Verdum – I think Verdum actually takes Alistair. And we'll take Antonio again. He's already beat him once. He'll beat him again. And it'll be I'm predicting Antonio versus Barnett in the finals. And I think Barnett will take it. It's kind of the outside guy there, but that's how I see it going down. Just the weird way they put the brackets up. I would have.
Yeah.
I would prefer to see it. Best Alistair and Verdum on opposite sides, but you know, their first round matchup. Anyhow,
they were probably banking on ending up with Fedor versus Barnett at the end.
Yeah, Barnett has the easier bracket. He's on the other side of that.
Barnett's fighting Rogers. Then that winner fights Karatinov.
It's the Andre bracket. Yeah. Barnett, yeah, again, Barnett will probably breeze through Sergey. So he goes right to the finals. And I don't know about if Alistair wins. Alistair, I think, would be the hardest fight for Barnett. But again, we're talking conjecture. Who knows where the things will happen? Alternates could come up.
Right.
We may actually finally get Fedor Barnett, the fight that destroyed Affliction.
We could end up with Overeem versus Overeem.
That's true, and they've said they'll do it.
So,
brothers always say, you know, training partners never want to fight. Brothers always seem to want to fight, which I guess makes sense because they grew up probably beating the crap out of each other, as most brothers do. So, I don't know. I don't have a brother. Did you and your brother fight?
Not a lot. No.
Ever like physically like beat the crap out of each other?
No, not really.
What about you, Brian? Do you and your late brother get into it as kids?
Well, he was, 16 years older than I was, so that would have been a child abuse.
So yes.
No, I mean, you know, my other brothers and I have one brother that I would love to beat the shit out of, but no, because most of them, when we were younger, they would have really demolished me, and now it would be the other way around. It for me, it would be like, you know, elderly abuse, so just, but no, they really went at it themselves, so yeah, that's normal.
Yeah, I mean, anytime I was very close to a couple of my cousins who, ones were only 4 days apart in age, and the other one's a year younger, and we used to, we used to grapple all the time just in fun, and then sometimes we'd just get mad and throw down nasty friggin' fights. So, it is surprising me, like, people are like, oh, little brothers are not going to fight. I'm like, brothers will fight. Teammates might not, but brothers are like, yeah, I'll fight him. Adopted brother, the Shamrocks, have said they threw it out on the commentary on the show. I don't know how much that would draw at this stage in life, but I think it would still be draw interest. Ken versus Frank.
It'd be something to watch anyway.
Something to watch. True.
Yeah, watch it between episodes of My Little Pony.
I actually saw Frank's first televised wrestling match in the WWF at the time, and it was not very good.
Frank or Ken?
Ken.
I don't think Frank's ever done.
Frank, Frank ever showed up on WWF.
He was trained in pro wrestling. I don't think he ever actually did it, but he fought in early rings and Pancrase, which had some worked elements. So. Yeah. He's very familiar with the concept.
I saw Ken's match against Vader, and it was awful.
I can only imagine how bad that would have been.
It was awful.
I always liked that, it was like, oh, he's a leg lock guy, so they gave him a pro wrestling heel hook. But anyone who's watched, knows any MMA or jiu-jitsu, like, that is like, that the heel hook that Ken Shamrock and Kurt Angle later adopted is like, does absolutely nothing. You're simply moving the ankle to a slightly uncomfortable position. But as for wrestling, I guess you just sell it as, however you want to sell it. I'm still waiting for the first shoot figure four in MMA. That's my dream. Someone's going to pull it off, and it'll be glorious. The shoot figure four, if you can get it on, does hurt like a son of a bitch. It's basically a knee bar using your own leg against you. And it hurts like a son of a bitch, but it's really, really hard to get on somebody. anyway, I guess that'll bring us into a little pro wrestling talk. Brian, do you see Raw or highlights of Raw?
No, I was told about it. I saw last week's when Vince came out and said that he would announce the host for WrestleMania, but he just teased it and didn't say who it was going to be. And I later found out that it's going to be The Rock. So, wow.
Yeah, he came out, he cut a promo. It was awesome. It's better than... He's just miles above anyone else in wrestling right now. Him being gone so long, it's just, when he comes back, it's like so obvious. It's like, man, we have nobody like this right now.
Like, yeah, it's a shame. Vince needs to throw him ungodly amounts of money.
There's not enough. Vince doesn't have enough money to get. He literally has no. He literally could, does not have enough money to give Rock to get, go back to wrestling. Hollywood pays that, you know, ridiculously more than WWE, and there's not the schedule.
It's a shame. Wrestling's hard to watch. And, you know, if you just had someone who was kind of really entertaining like that, it makes it a lot easier. And, you know, I'm someone that grew up in Mid-Atlantic territory. I have to drive by Ric Flair's house to go to work, so, or his old house to go to work. So it's, yeah, I miss The Rock quite a bit. Steve Austin, too. But The Rock was something amazing.
Austin is at least coming back. He'll be a coach on Tough Enough. They're reviving the their reality show.
Wow. Wow.
I can't remember who the other coaches are. I think Steamboat's one.
Oh, that would be amazing. I do have to say, speaking of Tough Enough, I was, of course, I live in, you know, white trash hell, and everyone here, of course, still loves wrestling. And there was a kid, a parent was correcting their child. Child was probably 7 or 8 years old, and it was a girl named Maven. So the
you
odds
just
are,
assume she was made named after the Tough Enough One winner.
Yes, I guarantee it. Guarantee it. This happened last week. It was awesome.
was she African American?
No. No, she
was
not.
Even weirder.
Yes.
Though Trailer Trash and Ghetto Trash do seem to name their kids fairly similarly.
Yes.
Cars, stripper names, random people on TV, soap stars. Oh, I just classist a bunch of people, but they're from South Carolina, so who cares? Or North Carolina, I apologize.
North Carolina, it's okay. South Carolina is only good for, like, pornography and fireworks. At least North Carolina has banks and wrestling.
It's true. You have Ric Flair and Steamboat. Steamboat was big in Mid-Atlantic over there.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I grew up under Georgia Championship Wrestling, which, of course, had a lot of Flair also, and Steamboat. And, of course, the big whiff, you know, I think, of course, everyone grew up with. The Road Warriors were always huge. And I don't know if the rest of the territory as they were, but, you know, that was always the big, one of the bigger things. Even before I was a fan, you know, there were names I knew. And from being from Georgia, it's definitely, you know, a combination of, you know, WWF and, you know, TBS. You know, the names I knew growing up before I became a fan, you know, Hulk Hogan, obviously, Randy Savage, Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Dusty Rhodes, and the Road Warriors.
You know, it's interesting. It's been a while since I went to go see a local card, but mostly what we would have are old, washed-up Mid-Atlantic wrestlers. And for some reason, the biggest draw locally was the Rock and Roll Express, even as of a few years ago.
Oh yeah, Rock and Roll Express is huge in Mid-Atlantic.
They're just so old.
They are, but they, you know, invented tag team wrestling. I mean,
yeah,
them and the Midnights. You know, that's, you know, the move is called the Ricky Morton position is, you know, the babyface member of the team in peril in a tag team is still called the Ricky Morton position.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that tells you how much influence they had. You know, Bobby Eaton, I've heard, you know, is like the nicest guy in wrestling, but, you know.
Friend of mine who was trying to get into wrestling actually paid Bobby Eaton to wrestle him.
Okay.
Such a strange, crazy place I live.
It's North Carolina. What do you say? I've been to your home. I'm not surprised by a lot. Your home gave me a virus. It wasn't my fault, but me and Alan were trying to watch UFC at the hotel, and I ended up paying for my pirating sins by getting a virus. Don't pirate pay-per-view streams, kids. It's bad. Anyway, Alan, you still there, or do you wonder?
I'm here.
Okay. Hey, we haven't done wrestling talk in a long time, so that's pretty cool.
Ironically, you know, like after Radio Free Cybertron and New Soundwave air, in like the post show, it's nothing but wrestling.
That's hilarious.
It's like John and Rob. It's all we want to talk is wrestling stuff.
I still want to do Still Real to Me. Also, I didn't realize that the name of the Still Real to Me guy, David Willis.
Wow. That's interesting.
It's like three. There's like three semi-famous David Willises, like the guy that works for Adult Swim, Our Own Walkie, and the internet famous Still Real to Me guy.
What is Still Real to Me?
All right, you want to explain that one, Brian?
Wrestling is still real to me. I mean, you know, wrestling's fake. Everyone knows it's fake, but
I understand the name, but what is it?
I've never. What is it? It's a website, isn't it?
No, it was a guy. He was giving. It was like a Q&A, I think, with Terry Funk. Actually, I'm almost positive it was Terry Funk. And this guy, David Willis, no kid, shoot name, stood up and, you know, was kind of talking about, like, you know, wrestling's. You know, everyone knows about wrestling, but, you know, we see how you guys get hurt for real and, you know, screw up your knees and your bodies for our. And he starts break down crying and says, "It's still real to me, damn it!" And, you know, came one of those things that went viral. The dude takes bookings now. The Still Real guy.
You know, I have to say, I think most people at this point have watched The Wrestler, but The Wrestler is like the most true to life thing I think I've ever seen. It was amazing, and it's true. I mean, the guys beat themselves to death inside and outside of the ring to make it happen, and. It's not an easy job.
No.
I'm never going to... I mean, they had the Necro Butcher match when they're, you know, using staple guns on each other. I'm just like, dude. Whatever happened, just like, you know, huge, like, fake moves and the screaming and fake pain. I mean, I'm fine with it. I would rather see that, honestly, than watching some guy...
Yes.
Mutilate himself for a fake sport, you know. MMA is different. MMA is like, yeah, kill or be killed. It's pro wrestling. Be fake. We know it's fake. We don't care it's fake. Just make it look good. You don't have to kill yourselves. You know, thank God they're cutting down on, you know, all the major companies have put a kibosh on headshots with chairs. The concussion thing really coming out these days. That makes me happy.
WWE and WWF had put the kibosh, for the most part, on pile drivers, and occasionally someone would pull them out, and of course, Owen Hart pulled one out that basically changed professional wrestling for a long, long time.
He shortened Steve Austin's career. Steve Austin would probably still be going today if, you know, he hadn't got that botched pile driver. The only people I know in the WWE who are allowed to do it, and it has to be with permission, is Undertaker and Kane. And that's the Tombstone version, which is, you know, way safer than the traditional.
Way safer, yeah. But, especially for, I mean, they're so tall, of course, that it's easier for them than it would be for me.
Although Petey Williams in TNA does that Canadian Destroyer, like that back-flipping, you know, it's a ridiculous flippy-do move into a pile driver, but it looks cool. It's completely, you know, about... It stretches the credibility of the move that pretty much the other guy has to do all the movement. But it's also very dangerous looking because, you know, it does kind of drop the guy on the head. If you're not an athlete like Petey Williams, it will, you know, you probably would cripple a guy. Speaking of wrestling news, TNA actually had an increase in viewership.
Did someone else turn it on?
Yeah, wives and girlfriends. Believe it or not, TNA fans have wives and girlfriends. So that was probably more shocking to me than anything. The Jeff Jarrett, Kurt Angle, Karen Angle soap opera thing apparently resounded well with females and increased their viewership by like 0.3. Like they went from a 1.1 to a 1.4 for about a month.
I mean, but that's a 1.4 that is not in direct competition with Monday Night Raw. Correct. I mean, it doesn't air opposite of.
No. No matter what TNA has done in like the last, I'm gonna say 6 years, they draw 1-1 every week. Like that's just their base. That's just, I mean, to their credit, they even draw it on weekend on like holidays and stuff. So you know their audience is friggin' loyal. At least to watching the show, they can't sell pay per view to save their lives, but their audience is very loyal. They get like that 1-1 every week. But it was like consistently up to a 1-4 for a while, and they broke down the demographic, and it was like same households but more people viewing because the wives and girlfriends were staying with the for the soap opera.
Interesting.
It definitely was. And it's based on a real life angle. You know, Kurt Angle really did divorce Karen Angle, and she really did marry Jeff Jarrett.
I did not know that. That's crazy. That's similar to what was it, the Matt Hardy?
Matt Hardy. Oh, so speaking of your Carolina boys, Matt Hardy. What's with your boy Matt?
Dude, why
is he fat?
Did he get off drugs or did he get on drugs? I guess is the question.
No one can tell. He was screwed up. He was getting like kind of chunky at the end of his WWE run. He got himself. He kept trying to get himself fired. They didn't want to fire him because they didn't want him going to TNA. So finally, he like posted videos of like Rey Mysterio without his mask on. So they're like, "Yeah, you're gone." And then he was like off TV between the shows for a month and came back just gigantic. And he stopped wearing a shirt. It's like, who stops wearing a shirt after you get fat? You know, isn't like when you get buff, you start not wearing a shirt? Because if I remember, like young Matt Hardy, like wore a shirt like his whole career when he was like 21 when he was like in shape. So now he's fat, he's gonna take it off. Apparently he's dropped a couple pounds lately, so I don't know. But yeah, he was posting videos of him and Jeff seemingly out of their minds on drugs, talking about random shit and shit talking I think Val Venus of all people.
Oh, wrestler should podcast.
Some Matt does. He posts his little crazy videos, and I don't know. He's, you know, it was his whole gimmick. You know, he was the internet wrestler.
Yes, and he was awesome at that point.
I've always liked him as a heel better, but you know, he's still even fat. He's still, you know, a pretty boy, and the girls still like him. But yeah, Matt Hardy version one. I was like, I love that character.
That was great stuff.
It was. But anyway, I think that's a good some wrestling talk in here. So like, man, we actually live up to our banner for once. Just hard to talk to myself when there's no one else here but me and Alan, who doesn't follow wrestling.
John and Rob would both be up for doing it. Rob's not really available on the weekends, but John is, and John would love to talk wrestling.
That'd be awesome. Real quick, I think I'm down to everything but on the Strikeforce Challengers from this weekend. Only thing of note, Ryan Couture, son of Randy, won the choke at the last second. Hello? Anybody hear me?
Yes. Yes, I hear you.
Okay. Everything was muted. I think Alan's wandered off. Alan, are you there?
Yeah, he wandered off. Too much wrestling.
Wow, he can't even sit there for like 2 minutes. He just like literally just gets up and leaves. It's amazing. What a professional host. Anyway, yes, Randy Couture's son Ryan is actually 28, which just blows my mind. Like, not only is there a father who has a son who's fighting, but he's not like he's young. He's 28 years old.
Did
like,
he just get into fighting too, basically? Because Randy's career, Randy's been able to, at his age, been able to fight because he got into it late, right?
He got into it a little late. I mean, there really wasn't a sport when he started. You know, the UFC, he called it the UFC. Like, you know, he was an Olympic alternate. They're like, sure, they brought him in to lose, basically, and he ended up winning. And it's kind of how his career started. But yeah, he's 48. His, you know, he had his first kid, you know, Ryan Couture, when he was obviously 20. But yeah, his son's, he's had like 6 amateur fights. He's undefeated, amateur and pro, and now he's had 2 pro fights. Looks pretty decent, but again, yeah, he's starting kind of late. It just blows my mind. You have a 28 and a 48-year-old son, father-son, you know, in the pro wrestling world, they would be a tag team at some point.
Was he on the Challengers card last night?
Oh, like who came back? Yes, he was.
Had to pee.
Oh, yeah. Ryan Couture won rear naked choke. His opponent was tough dude. You know, like Ryan dominated the whole fight. He was trying to finish, and he literally finished in like the last 20 seconds. He finally got a rear naked choke. So, that was, and he got a knockdown. He comes from a wrestling background like his dad. He had been working on his Muay Thai really hard up at Extreme Couture in Vegas. And, he actually connected with a nice little right hook and knocked the guy down, which ended up leading to him dominating the entire second round. And the third round, he got a trip takedown and was working for submissions and finally got the rear naked at the, with 20 seconds left. So, doesn't really look like, he has his dad's eyes, but he doesn't look like a little, like Mini Randy or anything. He looks like a different kid. So, but maybe when he gets older and start losing his hair, I don't know. And his ears are starting to get fucked up, but they're not as bad as his dad's. But really, whose ears are as bad as Randy Couture's? Anyway, I think that'll do it for this edition of Outside the Cage. Anything else to add, Brian or Alan?
I got nothing.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Sorry for the long delay, but we'll try to make this more regular in the future. It seems to be about an MMA event once a week nowadays, so we'll try to keep it weekly, assuming Brian keeps his computer on. And we'll see you next time outside the cage.